Good morning. You are watching D Program with Ted Rawl and John Kiriakou. I don't know why John's all small.
I was thinking, geez, I was only gone for a day and I've been relegated.
I think that was my fault.
Really funny. Like, what was that?
Yeah, you know, my father worked in the Air Force. It's one of my favorite stories about workaholism. He was a young officer. And he went on vacation. When he came back, some other dude was sitting at his desk, and so he asked his boss. He's like, "Well, you know, you weren't here, so we needed your desk. It was going to waste." So he's like, "Well, can I have my desk back?" It's like, "Well, where's that guy going to sit?" For a month, my father made do sitting on the floor behind a cardboard box.
Oh, and then, my God!
And then
That's the military.
General came in and saw him and said, "You know, what the hell is that man doing sitting on the ground?" And then yelled at my dad's boss. And I was always like, "God, that's such a lesson. You go away for just a little bit. People be screwing with you."
You know,
we gotta,
go ahead, John. Sorry. Totally apropos of nothing but that story. When I was in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee staff, my boss said to me one day, he pulled me aside. He said, "Listen, I'm really sorry to have to do this." And I was like, "Oh my God, they're going to fire me or something." He said, "I'm going to have to move you out of the office that has the window because we've got a team coming in and we're going to have to squeeze three people in there." And I said, "Oh yeah, sure." He said, "You're not mad?" I said, "Oh, Doug," I said, "I've been in government for 20 years. I don't think I've ever had a desk where I sat more than a year. It's constantly round robin with desks in government. No problem." He had come from journalism. He didn't know anything about government. But
John,
yeah, that's what they do.
The news be breaking literally just as we went on the air. Two major stories. The former president of Honduras, Hernandez, who was sentenced to 45 years in prison, has just been released from prison. Also, so he's out. And then the city of San Francisco is suing the manufacturers of ultra processed foods just broke. I think that's going to work. I think that's going to be as big a deal as the big tobacco litigation. John, we have a full packed show here. To get through. Coming in halfway down, we have Achilles Larrea of Larrea Wealth Management, friend of the show. He's been on before to talk about, I think the timing couldn't be better about the economy and basically how things look, because I think a lot of people are on edge. I know I'm one of them.
Seriously.
So we'll see what he has to say about the imminent state of the economy. We've got the lead story today about Sudan offering Russia a naval base, always a big deal for Russia. They always have sought access to the sea historically. The U.S.-Ukraine-Russia negotiations, Putin's meeting with Trump's envoy today. This lawsuit by a federal judge, which I think I'm really interested in what you have to say as a former federal employee, because you have insight into this interaction between the executive branch control over the federal workforce and all that. And after Achilles, we'll talk about, I think, something that's groundbreaking. We've never been closer to a cure for HIV, and it's a new study shows a lot. I don't know. I just wanted to get through all of that, John.
Yeah.
And also wanted to bring everyone up to date on Robbie Aid. Robbie Aid is our effort to fund our producer. Every month, at the beginning of the month, we try to get to $1,000. You guys got us there last month with this, our first month doing it.
Thank you for that.
And yes, thank you very much. I know Robbie's grateful and we're grateful. And I just got Robbie's invoice for my $250, and I'm sure you're going to get yours.
I paid mine.
I'm going to pay mine today, Robbie. Please keep that money coming in. As of yesterday, you guys kicked in $207. So if we get to $1,000, we'll stop asking. We'll bring in Robbie a little bit later on to talk a little bit about that, but also to talk about the Rumble thing, which you guys who are regular viewers know all about. But, you know, new people come on board all the time. We have hundreds of new subscribers every month. So the show
Wonderful.
Is growing and
Wonderful.
That's doing great. John, what would you like to talk about first?
To tell you the truth, I'd like to talk about what we were talking about backstage just really quickly.
Great.
There is a special election today for a congressional seat in Ruby Red, Tennessee. This is a congressional district where Donald Trump won 70% of the vote. And the latest poll show the Republican there winning 45 to 44. This is
well within the margin of error.
Well within the margin of error. It's all about turnout today. But this is an indication of just how frustrated Republicans are, where, you know, Robbie made a good point backstage that I think bears repeating. There are a lot of MAGA Republicans who are upset that Donald Trump seems to be trending toward the neoconservative position, especially as it relates to Venezuela. MAGA Republicans do not want these wars of choice. There's no reason for us to invade Venezuela.
No.
We have a national interest in keeping China out of Venezuela, but you don't have to put troops on the ground to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what happens today, I think the Republicans going to win, but I think what happens today is going to set the tone for what happens in the midterm elections in 2026, November of 2026.
Agreed. And we already saw Democrats swept in the recent elections last month. John, very quickly, this was yesterday's topic, but you weren't here. So I'm interested in your take on, you know, how much heat and how much continued heat will Pete Hegseth suffer for that sort of double tap strike in the Caribbean?
The Washington Post reported this morning that Hegseth is trying to pin the blame on the general who actually carried out the order.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the admiral who actually carried out the order. And uniformed leaders, other admirals and generals, are jumping up and down saying there's no way this guy's going to go down for a war crime when the order came from the top.
So much for Harry Truman. The buck stops here, right? I mean, that's not a good look for Hegseth.
No. You know, you and I were talking about Hegseth. I'm going to say it was a year ago. Not a year ago. I'm going to say 6 or 8 months ago, after Signalgate, mm-hmm. right? And I said, I just didn't see how Hegseth could last the rest of the year. Well, here we are in December.
Mm, he may still not.
He may not. And
he seems to really be bugging the president. He's causing the president trouble.
See, and that's the key right there. The president doesn't need this kind of silliness going on.
No.
And I think a lot of these mistakes are being made just because the guy's not, you know, a career administrator. He's not a corporate leader. He was a Fox News personality.
We talked about this when he was appointed, right? It was just like, this is the hardest managerial job, literally the biggest employer in the world. And it's a job that has chewed up far smarter and brighter people than him.
Exactly right.
Okay, so what's next? What should we talk about? Sudan?
Yeah, let's talk about Sudan. I had to get a chuckle out of this, Ted, because first of all, Sudanese military dictatorships usually last but 15 minutes or so. There was, of course, a military dictatorship that lasted a decade in the 90s, but usually these juntas come and go in Sudan. Mm-hmm. So to offer the Russians a naval base, friendly gesture. That's a nice gesture. It's not going to happen.
No.
And even if it does happen, as soon as a new government takes over in Sudan, they're going to throw the Russians out.
I was just going to say, so, I mean, if you're the Russians, do you want to invest the time and the money to build infrastructure that might lose?
You know what I would do if I were the Russians? I would talk to Eritrea.
So let's put up a map here.
Yeah. Oh, there's okay. Eritrea. Okay, good. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Sudan is one of the most unstable countries on the planet.
Literally in the middle of a, I don't know if you can't really call it a civil, I guess you could
yeah,
call
yeah,
it
it's a civil war. It's a civil war.
So Sudan is kind of like, so it already had a civil war a few years ago that led to the creation of South Sudan.
Correct.
Which nobody really remembers as a full-fledged independent country now.
Oh, yeah.
Recognized by the international community with a seat at the UN and all that. And now Sudan is, the rump Sudan is at civil war between what the rapid support forces, paramilitaries, and the Khartoum-based government. It's exactly rough there. Right. It's really fucking bad. I have a friend who's a cartoonist who lives in Khartoum, and he has heinous stories to tell.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who is from Asmara. I was just talking to her yesterday, and she was telling me about how desperately Eritrea wants good and normal relations with the United States. There's an embassy here in Washington. I've met the ambassador once or twice at different like Julian Assange events. But when I went to Ethiopia in 2011, the head of political affairs at the American embassy described Eritrea to me as the North Korea of Africa.
Mm.
And yes,
I always thought that was the Central African Republic.
Oh no, they've changed since they had their asses kicked by the Rwandans. But Eritrea is a police state. It's got its problems, but it's stable. And if it's not going to have good relations with the United States, it could and should and probably will have good relations with Russia. And so if the Russians want a Navy base that they're not going to have to evacuate from,
why wouldn't 12 they?
Months, I mean, just why wouldn't
that,
they?
Look at that map. That is incredibly exactly. important.
Exactly.
I mean, so much of the world's shipping traffic, including not little oil, goes through the Red Sea.
Correct.
On the including through the Gulf of Aden and the Suez Canal. I mean, it's incredibly important. You know, why not do both? Why not approach Eritrea and have a sort of a low key, temporary facility in Port Sudan, just sort of see how it goes?
Yes. Why not do both? The only reason I could think of that the Russians would want to do both is the cost.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be about it. Why not do both? Why not approach whatever rump government happens to be in place in Somalia?
Right. You know? Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're losing the Sahel, but this is, frankly, on this particular, game of risk, I would rather have these ports than the Sahel.
I agree with you. I'd rather have the ports, without any question. Yes, because the ports give you an opening to the entire world, and the Sahel, you're stuck in the middle of nowhere in the sand.
So, thanks for the buck. He said, watch Texas men indicted for planning to invade Haiti, take women and children as sex slaves on YouTube. Yeah, I saw it too.
Yeah, I saw that. Hilarious.
Village Idiot, thanks for the comment. What does the Horn of Africa have that anyone would want? John, take it away.
geographic location. Mm-hmm. That's about it. There's no oil. There are no rare earth metals. There are no diamonds laying on the ground. It's just location, location, location.
It's those shipping channels.
That's it.
I mean, it just is. But okay. And US Triple X, thanks for the $2. With everything going on with Hegseth and pushing blame and the weird pointless conference with all the generals, how much more will the military top need to take before they get fed up? Possibly a coup. Well, that's not going to happen.
No, a coup's not going to happen. But I think that everybody's waiting to see what 2028 ends up as.
Hmm.
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, what's the practical effect? I mean, of dissent or anger within the military ranks? I mean, people, I guess, take early retirement. Hmm. People, recruitment becomes more challenging. But beside that, anything?
No, not really.
Because, I mean, obviously, people have exiled the Knights of Malta now. Ted, maybe you could capture that in a comic. Oh, maybe. It is first deadline's tomorrow, so I can do that for this week. I think this is a big story. You don't think they will avail? Do you think the Russians will avail themselves of the Port Sudan offer at all? Like, they won't even send a single boat?
Oh, not as a permanent base, no.
Mm-hmm.
To build out a permanent base, it's going to take years. And the mm-hmm. Russians really don't have the money for this kind of thing right now. They're busy, prosecuting a war, which is very expensive.
Yeah, maybe we should talk about that.
Yeah.
So basically the current right now, Putin's going to be meeting with Trump's envoy. It looks like the administration can smell a deal. It looks like the Ukrainians kind of see what's coming. So basically, it looks like the major sticking point is there's areas of the Donbass that Russia still doesn't control, and Putin's insisting that he wants the entire Donbass. This is like that joke from the first Family Comedy album where
I remember that
they're ordering sandwiches, and then Khrushchev says, "I would like the Eastern sandwich." And then JFK goes, "There is no Eastern sandwich." And then he goes, "There's only the Western sandwich." And then Khrushchev says, "Then I want the Eastern portion of this Western sandwich." And I think right now Putin wants the eastern portion of Ukraine's Western European Donbass.
Yeah.
It does look like, I mean, so here's the question. Is that a throwaway why does Putin want the entire Donbass, or is that just a throwaway negotiating point?
I think it's a negotiating point.
And they'll just send, I think we know we're ending up with the frozen line of control. The lines, the military lines are the military lines. There's no world
exactly what we've said.
Trump, or for that matter, Zelensky, can be seen, okay, we've signed this deal, and now we're watching the Russian troops advance after the deal.
Right.
No, that doesn't happen.
No. Right? This is exactly, and we're no smarter than anybody else, you know, any expert on Russian affairs, but this is what we have said from the very beginning. It's about the Donbass, it's about Crimea, Kherson, Luhansk, Donetsk, the Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine.
Yeah.
I don't think he's at all interested in the Ukrainian-speaking areas of Ukraine, because were he to take something like that, it would result in terrorism and malcontention and troubles that he doesn't need.
Reading between the lines, it does look like the Ukrainians have finally come to Jesus.
It seems that way. This morning, Witkoff and Jared Kushner arrived in Moscow for talks with the Russians. That tells me that they have a message to convey to the Russians from the Ukrainians. So I think we're inching towards something here.
When do you think we'll see it by the end of the week?
What's today, Tuesday? It's mm-hmm. possible. Sure.
Okay. Well, it's obviously possible. We'll be following that here. Okay. So, Chris Stubbs' show, why is that our job to replace any other government? That's our job at home. Now we do, you decided tyranny. I drew the line at endlessly mass printing dollars and taxing us. A lot going on there in that comment. Look, I agree. It's not our job to overthrow foreign governments unless they pose a direct threat to the United States. And even then, I'd be very careful.
Real quickly, Ted, let me ask you what you make of these recent reports just out over the last 2 days or so that, and maybe you spoke about this yesterday, but Maduro called Trump a few days ago and begged him, you know, just give me enough time to get out. I'll give you all the oil, you know, all these reports that we're seeing that the CIA tried to recruit the pilot to land the plane in Key West and trick Maduro into thinking he was landing in Cuba. And where does this go? Is it over for Maduro?
I think I think that, you know, negotiations rely on trust. And I think there's too much mistrust, particularly on Maduro's side toward the U.S., and understandably so, that, like, you know, he can't trust any deal because of what you just said, right? If, let's just say, you know, we have a Ferdinand Marcos type situation scenario. Right. It's like you can board the chopper or the plane with your gym bag full of bullion and get the fuck out. Okay, but who can believe the U.S. at this point? I mean, you know, who's going to, and this is not specific to this current president, but in general, you know, we lie a lot. Our deals are not like set in stone. I mean, he could easily end up getting, you know, his advisors have to be telling him, oh, you could end up occupying the cell formerly occupied by Noriega in the Georgia prison system. So I don't know. Right. I don't think they can come to terms. And the challenge for Trump is, does he want to go to, I mean, there could be armed resistance from the Venezuelans. There's a lot of guns in that country and they have a lot of militia. You know, it could look a lot like a South American version of Iraq. And, you know, he knows that destroyed Bush. He's president partly because of Bush's mistakes in Iraq. He knows this. So it's kind of like, I think he wants to sort of push Maduro out, like sort of, and if it works, if it's not too hard, he's willing to do it. But,
yes.
But if it requires a ground invasion and all that, like, no. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. I think that Maduro genuinely wants to settle this. And if that means that he gets out with his bag of bullion, he would be willing to do it, but he cannot trust the United States to let him get out to make his way to Cuba or to Moscow or wherever it is he's going to run. And so he feels panicked and stuck. Mm-hmm. With that said, I genuinely do not see a scenario where the U.S. sends ground troops.
I don't either.
I just can't see it.
I mean, I can't even imagine a Bush-Cheney administration doing that.
No.
And certainly not this president, who's so skeptical of foreign adventurism. Although, when the truth comes out from the Trump administration, when in a tell-all book in 15 years, which you and I will be at the bookstore, if bookstores still exist, to buy.
Yeah.
It's like, I am always going to want to know whose fucking idea was this boat bombing campaign. I don't think it was President Trump's.
Totally agree. I think this came directly from Hegseth.
This is it's a boneheaded fucking thing. Yeah. It makes no sense. I mean, you know, we've talked about it, the fake, you know, the fake cartel, the fake drugs, the fake everything about it. Mm-hmm. The whole thing smells so bad. It's so dumb.
Couldn't agree more.
Philip Blair is asking me how safe my friend in Khartoum is. He's a controversial political cartoonist in Sudan, so he's not safe. Does Zelensky end up in Israel because of the investigations? What do you think?
You know, it's possible. I told you I've read that he just recently bought a house in Greece. We've seen reports over the past couple of years that he has a house in London.
Italy so also, right?
I think that, well, for me, my bottom line is he does not retire and live happily ever after in Ukraine.
No,
I think that's
there's no world in which that happens.
No,
I mean, it's hilarious. Amit Karzai still lives in Kabul, which yeah. I still can't get over,
but he's under house arrest.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. Is it kind of like he has his beautiful house?
Yes.
And it's sort of like, what's her name from Myanmar?
Yes. Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yeah. Where she
used to live. Ted, the last time I left Kabul, I left in a helicopter. And the helicopter goes in it's called a corkscrew takeoff. Yep. So does
the passenger plane.
Yeah, so that you can't fire a rocket at it. And you go over these absolutely magnificent palatial homes. Mm-hmm. And those are the heroin poppy traffickers' homes.
They're so gaudy and gross. Just
gaudy, painted in the gaudiest colors. That he lives in one of those.
Oh, Frasmataz, this is for you, John, but I might have a thought. What would be curious what you have to say about the D.C. shooting with regarding to resettlement for collaborators. Is this an economic issue or a PTSD issue or both? It's certainly a PTSD issue.
Yeah, I believe very strongly that it's a PTSD issue. Yeah.
I don't think anyone will ever work for us overseas if we never admit any of our former collaborators.
No way.
I mean, as it is, we're not very good at it. Okay, Chris Stubbs, what caused our hand to wash what was going on in Vietnam like Laos was? Vietnam happened because of the guns and drug running out of Laos and the French connection. Okay, guys, I'm going to have to ask for better spelling and grammar when I read your questions, because it's like we're doing the show live. We're reading them on the air. And like if I have to interpret your typing, you know, that's going to be hard. Okay, sorry. Sorry about that. Don't mean to be snotty that way. Okay, so let's talk about we can talk about the immigration judge thing before we bring in Aquiles in a few minutes. An immigration judge was one of many people, federal employees, fired by Trump earlier this year under the whole Doge thing. And so she filed a lawsuit complaining about discrimination under the Civil Rights Act. She said that she was fired because she's female. She's also because she's a double citizen of the U.S. and Lebanon, and because she ran as a Democrat for a municipal office at one point. And so she's claiming violation of her First Amendment rights as well. The government's counterargument says that the president has power to oversee the executive branch under Article 2 of the Constitution. That's true. And that right overrides the Civil Rights Act. So if the government's argument prevails here, this would mark a real weakening of the Civil Rights Act.
Seriously, yeah. I think the administration is wrong. I think the argument is wrong. The Civil Rights Act has been in place since, what, 1965?
Yeah.
And the only exemption historically to the protections of the Civil Rights Act have been at the CIA. Mm. So everybody in the government is protected by the Civil Service Act, except the CIA, which serves at the pleasure of the president. If there's somebody at the CIA, the president doesn't like his tie, or his face, he's fired. There's nothing he can do about it.
Right.
But in the rest of government, that's never been the case. And I think she's going to win. Although I will say I am deeply troubled that an immigration judge has dual citizenship.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, do you think in order to accept that job, I mean, you and I both have dual citizenship.
Yeah.
Do you think that that she should have had to renounce her Lebanese citizenship?
I do. Listen, if I were an immigration judge and a Greek came before me, I'd give the Greek anything he wanted. I would. I'm biased.
I'm that way. Yeah, I love the French. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. She could recuse herself from anything involving Lebanese national.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I mean, I would hate to give up my French citizenship.
Oh my God,
I value it so much.
Me too. I'm so proud to be a dual citizen. And man, I can't wait. Every time I land in Europe and I whip out that EU passport and I blow right through immigration in 10 seconds. I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, Robbie hates that. I'm going to bring in Robbie right now. He can rant about that, and then we'll bring in Aquiles. Robbie, let's remind people about your – so we've raised $207 out of $1,000 needed. Thank you. By the way, we got to start like hitting a level like where John or I send out like books to people who, donate enough money and stuff like that. But we're working on that. This show is still, it's just happy the three of that. Us, you know? Yeah. So thank you so much for your support there. Robbie, if you could talk a little bit about why everyone should migrate over to Rumble and talk a little bit about what we're doing and why we're raising money for you. And then we'll bring in Aquiles.
Sure. Well, the reason why you're raising money for me is so that way I can pay my bills, and I appreciate the ability to do so. So that's a huge help. So thank you. But no, I mean, as far as why you want to come over to Rumble, I'm going to paint this real simple because I'm a simple guy. For every nickel that YouTube pays John and Ted, Rumble pays 98 cents.
And literally,
I mean, honest to God, that's what it is. It's pure economics. Rumble pays them significantly more.
Yeah, when the Rumble check comes, John and I view that as good news. When the YouTube check comes in, that's like finding money on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And another really cool thing about the way that Rumble works is that, one, it is a free speech platform. YouTube will censor the ever-living hell out of you if you say the wrong thing that goes against their wonderful community moderators. Rumble, you don't have that problem. Don't shoot porn, you're fine. So that's literally
that was my plan.
Well, you have to go to OnlyFans for that. Sorry.
Shoot.
But also though, just to kind of put a little cherry on the top, Rumble, you get premium content that you can't get anywhere else. And what's really cool is that if you become a channel subscriber on Rumble for $5 a month, you have access to that. Obviously, everybody's premium content, do it for $10 a month with Rumble Premium. And the kicker is that if you become a channel subscriber, Rumble does not take a dime of that money. That goes straight to the hosts, which is huge because YouTube takes 40%. Rumble doesn't. Rumble's built around the creator. Rumble has never censored John and Ted. YouTube has. True. And Rumble is also allowing them to pay their bills. So honest to God, that is – without Rumble, the show wouldn't exist. Let's just be honest what it is here.
Okay, and you can tell John and I why we're both wrong for being dual citizens.
Well, because I mean that's easy.
And then we're going to bring in Aquiles.
Honest to God, because I wonder, Aquiles might have something to weigh in on this.
Oh, here we go. We'll bring him in right now.
Yeah, bring him on in. That way, y'all can all tell me how.
All right, so here's Aquiles. Aquiles Larea. He's from the head of Larea Wealth Management, the author of a new book. Aquiles, nice to see you. We're going to be talking about the economy, but look, there's a lot of economic news. But let's talk about so keep going, Robbie.
Okay, well, how I see it with dual citizenship is that what is an escape valve. If you think that things are getting bad in the country that you live in, you say, oh, screw it, it doesn't impact me. You can just take your shekels, go somewhere else, and say the hell with it. So you take all the benefits, take all the money, take all the resources, go somewhere else, and you have nothing best in the future. That's the problem with dual citizenship. I mean, my family's been here since the 1600s. My ancestors are buried here. I'm not going anywhere. If this country falls apart and dies, I'm going down with it because I have nowhere else to go. My kids have nowhere else to go. I have a vested interest to make it better.
Robbie, we can have a gay marriage. I'll bring you with me to France.
No, I'm not a sodomite. Sorry, that's just not going to work. Well, then let's just hang that up.
Gay marriage,
you know, whatever. It's not going to happen. But no, I mean, honest to God, though, I mean, that's my argument about it. If you care about the country that you're in, if you love your country, they have to be invested in the future. That's why having kids is so important. That's why your citizenship matters. That's why Trump's selling citizenship with his gold card is such a stupid fucking thing to do. It cheapens citizenship. What's the point? If you can just buy it, what the hell is this? Is this Rome?
Well, see, I'm always very, I'm always hot for Rome arguments. Currently reading Wealth and, what is it called? Wealth, Thrones and Power. By Dan Jones, Pop History of of the collapse of the Roman Empire in the Middle Ages. So good book, well worth reading. Very very fun read. Robbie, I'm going to let you have the last word on that point, and we're going to bring in Achilles right now. So Achilles Larrea, thank you so much for joining us, friend of the show.
Pleasure to be here as always, guys.
As always. So the polls are very clear. The American people, left, right, and middle, all want the president to focus on affordability. I wrote my syndicated column last week about how, in my opinion, the last thing we want is to risk a deflationary spiral by actually succeeding in dropping prices. What we really need is more income for American workers so that people can pay these higher prices. What say you on that? And then I want to ask you about the AI bubble talk.
Yeah, it's very interesting when we talk about that. We've seen wage stagflation for more than a decade right now. Wages have not kept up with the cost of living. And it's very interesting. I don't know if you're following this across the country, but it's very interesting to see that Starbucks with its unions, they're walking the picket line right now. Any effective change, now you don't have to be the biggest union fan per se, but how does change get affected in this country? It was done through unions protesting. You know, the average office worker cannot do that because most states have an at-will employment where they can dump you at the drop of a hat, kind of like what John was pointing to before with the CIA. So going back, you know, with that wage stagflation, unless we see some dramatic change from corporations where they start to flow some of that cash flow that normally goes to the CEOs and to shareholder values, I don't foresee any affordability per se. And I'm going to give you a case in point. I always go to the rice example in the Asian markets, all right? I go to the Asian supermarkets here, H-Mart, and there are quite a few here in New York City. And these guys, just not even 3 months ago, guys, they were at $24 to $26 for a 20-pound bag of rice, white rice, jasmine rice. And that same bag, I went to H-Mart yesterday, just cost me $34, $36. So, perfect example of the inflation.
Close to 50% price increase.
Correct. And that's not the only place we're seeing it, but that is the place where the American consumer is seeing it on a regular basis. It's thrown in your face. You say Christmas, not a bah humbug, but Christmas. Holy cow. And then to top it off, these tariffs, whether they go through or not, that's on the higher end. You're not just going to affect the low-level consumer. You're affecting the higher-level consumer who's going and buying these different items and going to have to pay 30 to 50% more, guys. So the question becomes, what can this administration do to make sure that the affordability comes into play? And it seems that New York is front and center in a lot of cases because the cost of living is so high. That's why this mayor was elected, right or wrong, but it is the perception that people have going to the store, paying the rent, regular cost of living, gasoline. You know, we've seen a jump in gasoline as well here. So,
Achilles, are the inflation numbers bullshit? I mean, there was a
good question.
There was a website.
They're lower. They're lower than you think.
That's what I mean.
Being reported. That's for sure. All right.
You mean, wait, you think inflation is lower than being reported?
I'm sorry.
The other way around.
The other way around. So,
I mean, there's a website called Shadow Government Statistics that has argued for years that the actual real inflation rate, the way that it used to be calculated when we were kids, is closer to 10, 12, 13%.
Yeah, it looks like we're going back to where we were during the Biden administration, but some areas are worse.
Because I just don't believe all those years where it was like, oh, inflation rate is 1%. It's like, where? I mean, like, what's? I mean, some things don't go up, right? Like, a TV is ridiculously cheap. Like, I'm almost suspicious that a flat screen TV for $212 isn't going to blow up my house, but it won't. It's a beautiful, amazing device. But most things, right? I mean, all the big expenses, right? Housing, fuel, transportation, education, healthcare, they're all through the roof.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the inflation numbers do not take the consumer into account. I mean, if you look at the CPI number, consumer price index number, perfect example, it excludes certain expenditures that we as consumers see on a normal basis. You know, then the Fed will look not at the CPI, they're going to look more at the PPI, which is the producer price index, to X that amount out of the equation and go with the wholesale numbers. So yeah, we are seeing numbers that are quite skewed. I think that the inflation rate is closer to 5-6% at this point. I think the Fed has still work to do. I think cutting these interest rates down is a good start, but I think we have to make things more affordable for the consumer, and that is not going to go away. And unless wage stagflation starts to take front and center in the conversation with corporations, with not only sustainability, but affordability, and making, you know, a sense of, you know, one thing's to have shareholder value. I get it. You know, you want to enhance shareholder value. Your bonus depends on if you're a CEO. But at the same time, you got to say, hey, why is my guy, my employee, living out of his car in California, coming into work, you know, going to Planet Fitness to shower? And
the current CEO of Ford was just interviewed by Fortune magazine. He had a piece that that really blew up on the internet. Basically, Henry Ford was famous for doubling his workers' salaries to say, "I want my $5 an hour." Back in, you know, 100 years ago, saying, you know, I want my employees to be able to buy my cars. It's not because I'm a nice person. And Henry Ford was not a nice person.
No, he was ruthless.
And an empress. Yeah. But the thing is that, like, it was self-interest, right? The new CEO talked about because of the way the bifurcated labor contracts basically made it so that the new hires in the factories were making $17 an hour. Some of these guys are like suffering mental health issues. They're working at the factory. Then they go work at an Amazon warehouse all night long. They come in after 2 or 3 hours of sleep. No wonder they're like fucking miserable. In the latest contract, they boosted those workers' wages a lot. You know, I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about. Achilles, let me ask you a question from one of our viewers. Thanks for the $5, US XXX A-Rod. Question for you, how hard does it make your job to interpret the economy when you're going off numbers provided by an administration that has only sought favorable numbers and hired sycophants, not to mention there's been a shutdown and the numbers haven't been available the last, like, you know, 2 months?
You know, it's a great question, and there's no easy answer. We kind of have to, I hate to say this, we have to sift through the BS, you know, and we have to sift through the non-numbers that we don't see. I mean, we're not going to have updated numbers from October. So the Fed is kind of, it's not flying blind, but it's most certainly relying on ADP numbers, which is not enough information. Relying on solely PPI, CPI numbers is not enough information for them to do their jobs. I think they're going to have no recourse but to cut rates in December. I don't see that.
They're
not
always
happening.
So slow at it. They're, yeah. They, in my opinion,
There's a reason. There's the minute you get too aggressive with cutting rates, you can throw us into a recession faster than you say, John. You know, it's just so quick. And this occurred before. This is
what you mean, raising rates, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. I seems a little reverse today.
Today is Dyslexia Tuesday. Let's talk about some of the big economic news. I can't not let you go without talking about the AI bubble. Everybody, is there one?
No, it's still in its infancy, guys. I mean, you know, we talked about, I talk about this with media all the time. Look at the dot-com bubble. Yeah, there was a bubble there, but look how fast all of a sudden we're talking about this bubble. You know, the time frame is so condensed, so short. You know, personally, I think that AI is still in its infancy. There's still a lot to go as far as this is concerned. I think there's still a lot of money to be made in this area. And I, you know, I'm guilty as charged making that money. So, you know, I also believe in quantum computing. I also believe in related nuclear. Something has to power this. And it ain't going to be solar, and it ain't going to be coal. So your traditional sources aren't going to do that. You need nuclear power in order to make that happen.
On the show where Robbie was filling in for John, we talked about these AI data centers, that are driving up electricity rates, particularly in rural America. And there's a thought that it might become a potent political issue, like the new price of eggs.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with that. I think that it affects us all, but the byproduct of that is that we are heading into a new era with new technology that is going to benefit all of us.
But look, I use AI, so I'm not going to bitch about it. But isn't it kind of fucked up that, you know, at a time when we're worried about climate change and greenhouse gases, we're literally amping up our, you know, the stupidest thing ever is crypto. Like, we literally waste electricity on purpose in order to mine crypto, but now just so we can have a faster Google search, we're gonna fuck up the planet too.
Well, it's beyond Google. I mean, the search itself is much more detailed. It's like Google on steroids. If you look at ChatGPT and you look at how it could fund the business, create ChatGPT,
let me look at it, but that's a whole different topic.
Yeah, well,
I'm blocked on ChatGPT.
Maybe they don't like you anymore, Ted. You said something, John, and you know about this, the conspiracy behind these companies and how they look to F you out of opportunity.
Seriously.
Right, question for you, Achilles, from Katie Catastrophe. Anyone think housing will ever become affordable again? It's a good question.
No, I don't see that. I wish it were true.
Can the government do anything?
I think what would be interesting is someone needs to figure out how can we take the housing starts. You know, let's just say, for argument's sake, the cost of building housing right now, bring it back into the country, but affordably, have special programs that may are quasi subsidized by the government but not what you're accustomed right now, but have some sort of green deal, new deal with these companies where they can construct and rehab apartments or houses. That way, a certain segment of the population can have the American dream, because the American dream, unfortunately, for home ownership is dying. It died a long time ago in Japan. You know, houses actually were affordable at some point. By the way, the Japanese don't like old homes. So you can get an old home pretty cheap over there.
Having slept in one of those old Japanese houses in Kyoto with open courtyards and rice paper walls on a 30-degree day, I can see why they don't like those old homes.
Well, you know, they don't have heaters in their homes because of the earthquakes.
Right.
You know, so.
And the rice paper walls.
That too. So, you know, going back, in absence of some sort of quasi-government deal, FHA-type deal, I don't see the affordability coming back into the equation anytime soon.
Well, that's
but who knows? There's a lot of smart people out there, guys.
It's going to be a political football in a huge way. I mean, last time this country did anything, any attempt to make housing affordable was like after World War II, urban renewal and public housing. You know, obviously with mixed results, to say the least, right? But I mean, people are pissed about it. It's literally the American dream, and you're telling them they can't have it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a challenge to say the least. But you know what? We have a lot of smart people in this country, so I hope that someone kind of figures it out.
They all seem so quiet, though.
Well, you know what? It's not profit making.
Yeah.
When something doesn't make a profit, I'd keep my mouth shut too.
We have a question that was kind of waiting for you from before you came on from Phil Chats, and thanks for that question. How's Japan looking right now?
Well, Japan is facing a demographic challenge right now, and what's happening there is that, and the same thing in China, where you have this older population, people living into their 80s, 90s, 100s easily, and that there is not enough young people, there is not enough birth rate percentage going up to cover the, you know, so they're going to face a deficit, they're going to face issues all related to that. Healthcare could become acute.
That's our future too, isn't it though? I mean,
it's not just our future. I mean, I see it across Europe going to happen sometime within the next 10 years. Absolutely. You know, I mean, all you have to do is take a lost generation because of World War II. You know, so that's, 100%. You know, the amount of people to cover those pension schemes that they have throughout Europe, it's the numbers don't add up. How are you going to cover that up? Everybody loves Europe. I mean, I get things about Italy every single day, and I'm not Italian, but I get things say, hey, come to Italy, you know, you'll get a pension, you know, do work here or whatever on the cheap or what have you. You know, the life of a digital nomad seems very real until you're in your 60s, 70s, and you realize that you have nothing saved up, for a pension or the like, or there's nothing to cover.
Can you take one last question before you take off?
Of course.
Okay, because I know you have a hard out. And thank you for sticking around. The K-shaped economy is in the news, and basically that's just a fancy, or not a so fancy, but it's a way of just saying the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer. How much do you believe in that, and how much of a economic and political effect do you think it's going to have?
Hey, if you just look at history, guys, think about it. The rich have always gotten richer, you know, but there's a trade-off here.
Except after a revolution.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, if you didn't lose your head, you sure made out like a bandit during the French Revolution, you know. So
it's a big if.
And this is why we talked about dual citizenship, you know, or multiple citizenship. Hey, when it's time to get out of Dodge, it's time to get out of Dodge, you know. I'd love to stick around, but you know what? If I have the means and the resources to get the heck out, doesn't mean I'm disloyal to my country. It just means that I'm not going to stick around till somebody figures it out while, you know, stuff goes to hell in a handbasket. So, there's always going to be beneficiaries of chaos in the world. John would know this as well. You know, look at Afghanistan. You know, I'm sure that there are beneficiaries aside from the poppy, aside from, other type commodities. But I'm sure the middlemen made a lot of money with the withdrawal. The middlemen made a lot of money with the new administration, the Taliban coming back in and the like. You know, we see that throughout the world. Graft, you know, outside of the U.S., and we have it here in the U.S., graft works. It is the oil of many of these economies. So the rich, if you're a middleman, if you're, you know, someone there who can facilitate, you're going to make out like a bandit during chaos.
I always like to end on a dark note, and so thank you for that, Achilles. Achilles Larea is the head of Larea Wealth Management in New York City. Thank you so much for joining us, and a real pleasure, and take care and stay safe and don't drive out there.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
Talk good to see you.
Nice seeing you.
Okay, and John, we have an ad, and then ready to level up your game. AIM controllers is where custom meets unbeatable value, and right now it's the best deal of the year. We start with official Sony and Xbox controllers, fully compatible with console and PC, no functionality lost. Then you go wild with custom features, smart bumpers, paddles, grips, stick height, custom buttons, even design your own PS5 snap panels. And here's the part no one else is doing: lifetime warranty on all modified parts. That's right, lifetime. What other company does that? Exactly. Normally, a fully loaded setup could run you $400, but during our one price promo, it's just $209 or 182 euros. No matter how many features you add, use code Rumble at checkout and lock it in. This is your sign. Go to aimcontrollers.com and build the last controller you'll ever need. And so just a reminder, everyone, we're still taking your questions if you're watching us live on Rumble or YouTube. If you're watching us streaming, thank you for doing that. Most of you are in that boat, and so we really appreciate you. Please like and follow and share the show. John, I'm sure you're the same age as I am. And so, I remember when I was a college student in the early 80s, I was the dork among my friends who were like literature majors and stuff. So I read the news like crazy. I used to run out to get like 3 newspapers from the newsstand every morning. And, I read all the news magazines. And I remember, I think it was 1983 or so. And I came back to my dorm with a copy of, I think it was Time magazine. And they had this article about this new weird disease that was afflicting the LGBT community.
Right. They called it gay cancer.
Yeah. And they didn't, it changed names a bunch of times before settling on AIDS. Now we call it HIV. And so I went to more funerals during that period than I could count. I mean, it's the first time I bought a black suit because it was just became necessary, and lost so many people. It was a hideous disease. And then now we've gone through this period of the retrovirals, and people have been living. Think about Magic Johnson, who that amazing press conference he came out with, where he basically was like, "I have this. I got it from a girl, a really hot heterosexual girl." Sure. But the point is, but he's still going strong, and as are lots of other people, mercifully. And this was news that I think we've, been hoping for years, for decades. Finally, there's a highly anticipated study that looks like you're going to be able to not take a bunch of pills every morning to control your HIV. We already have this world where we have positive negative couples, where like one member of the couple is positive, the other one is negative. They don't even use any barriers for sex, and they don't transmit because the viral load doesn't transmit, is kept low enough that even if you have unprotected sex, it's okay. So people can be married and live a long time. But now you may be able to abolish that completely. It's not a sure thing, but it's looking incredibly good.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like you, I had several friends who died of AIDS. I even have a relative who is HIV positive and has been for 30 years now, I guess. This is going to be life-changing for a lot of people. And it also goes to show you the immense good that can come from government-funded research. This is exactly what NIH should be doing. It's exactly what the federal government should be funding, and working together with private organizations to come up with something like this. Kudos to them.
Yeah.
The world has waited for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, it was almost at a point where you were like, wonder if it's ever going to happen.
Yeah, exactly right.
Let's see. Got to do a shout out. Thank you so much for the $50 donation from Rumble's Unsung Pat. Well, we'll sing your praises. Regarding Russia, 1991, what Gorbachev heard from Baker, that's the 1994 Yeltsin-Clinton-Moscow summit, and the Putin ask for NATO membership, since redacted, Slick Willy Clinton again, 2014 call from Kiev to the United States. So, for people who know those references, I've always thought that was, we blew an opportunity to be friends with Russia that we never should have. So former President Hernandez from, this is just breaking now, of Honduras has been pardoned by President Trump as well as released. So he's out and about. Do you think, John, this is a, you know, President Trump is a stage master. He loves stagecraft and he loves timing. He knows it really well. He's impeccable. He's a pro that way. Do you think this precedes a possible pardon coupled with a graceful exit for Maduro from Venezuela? Say, I will let you go. I will pardon you. Look, I just did it to the other guy.
That had never occurred to me. I can't imagine. I can't imagine because it seems like in that case, Trump wants a scalp. I think in the Honduras case, Trump wanted to affect the outcome of the current election that's underway right now. That's just so close. Nobody knows how it's going to end up.
I'm not sure Trump wants Maduro's scalp. I think he just wants him gone. That's why they had negotiations.
Yeah, maybe. I never thought of that. It's certainly possible.
It would certainly make the pill go down easier, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's 10 o'clock Eastern time, which means it's time for the TMI show and the end of the program. We will be back tomorrow, as we always are, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Thanks for watching, following, and sharing the show. John, great to see you again. Looking forward to talking to you tomorrow again. And thanks for all your questions. Please support Robbie Aid, and let's get to $1,000 so we can talk about other stuff instead. See you tomorrow. A TMI show coming up.